So Epiphany is an older feast than Christmas, and it begins in the East, in Constantinople, where in many ways the center of the church was in those early days. It kind of transfers to Rome after some time. And so January 6th is Epiphany, and even to this day in the East, they celebrate Christmas on January 6th, not on December 25th. And so they don't exchange gifts until January 6th. And even in Italy, they do that. The gifts are exchanged on January 6th. And they don't have Santa Claus in Italy. They have Bufana, the good witch. And she's the one who brings the gifts for the little children. So Epiphany, of course, means revelation. It means illumination. There are probably a dozen different words that kind of get at that same idea. Revealing, lighting up. Notice how light is so much of a theme in the readings, especially that first reading from the prophet. Light has shone in the darkness. And light, of course, is a symbol of truth. It's a symbol of knowledge. It's a symbol of recognizing illumination. In the old days, those of you who were born before the century, in the cartoons, somebody had an idea, and so there would be this little light bulb that would go on over their head. So light is a symbol of getting it, you know? And so revelation is kind of getting it, isn't it? It's not something that wasn't fairly evident from creation. You know, the Bible suggests that revelation happens within God's creation. You look at creation and you know that somebody is in charge of this. Somebody started this. That the author of creation is revealed in his creation. And yet, revelation, as St. Paul suggests in that second reading to the Ephesians, revelation is something specific that comes directly from God. And for Paul, personally, this was a revelation that he got from the risen Lord, not from teaching from other people, but he got it directly from Christ. And so his prophetic utterance, the things he says, the things he teaches, the churches he founds and everything, it comes from this very personal revelation, a revelation that wasn't given before, he says. And what is specifically that revelation that he mentions? That the Jews and the Gentiles are equal, and that they both have access to Christ. One of Paul's central themes in his ministry was to the Gentiles, that they don't have to become Jews first. They can go directly to Christ. Well, if Paul were alive today, he might be saying something like, there are more people being saved than just Christians. Buddhists are being saved. Muslims are being saved. People of tribal religions are being saved. Vatican II taught that all of those religions have the seeds of revelation. Maybe they don't have the fullness of revelation like the church does, but they have the seeds of it, and God is active in those churches, in those religions. In fact, God is active even in the human heart for people who just are alienated by religion altogether. In their best sense, the Jews believed that this light of revelation was given to them not just for themselves, but as servants to call the other nations to God, not to be an exclusive club where they were superior to everyone else, but rather for service. And the Christian church exists in the same sense. We have often made it into an exclusive club. We're better than, we're saved and you're not. But that wasn't really Christ's intention. And in its best moments, the church never says that. There have been times in the church in the past when there was a teaching, there is no salvation outside the church. But really, that was always intended to mean culpability. You know, the church understood after the discovery of the New World that there were millions of people who had not had the gospel preached to them. So when the church was teaching that there's no salvation outside the church, they were presuming culpability. It's been preached to you, but you're just stubborn and you're not accepting it. And then they realized, but there are all kinds of people who have not even heard this. And so in the early 20th century, there was a priest in New York who was teaching that there's no salvation outside the church, and Rome condemned that as a false teaching. So where does that leave us? If the church is not some kind of exclusive club, if the church is not the only way to salvation, then why does the church exist? Well, it exists as a servant of the word. It exists to be a light to the world, to be a salt, a leaven, to offer seasoning, to offer levity, to be a leaven in the dough of the world, to attract by holiness. Jesus never forced anyone to believe anything. Jesus never forced anyone to agree with him. He enticed, he invited. And one of the things that we sometimes find frustrating about God is always inviting and never forcing. God puts up with our sin. God puts up with the sin of the world. God puts up with ignorance and darkness and obstinacy, patiently waiting for us to get it. But the fortunate thing is that we have this word, the scripture. This word has been given to us, this revelation has been given to us, and it behooves us to take up that responsibility and preach that word, to live that word, to be the attraction, to make it enticing, to make other people in the world say, I want what they have. I want to be like them. I want to know God like they know God. That's the responsibility of the Catholic Church, of the Christian community, to make it so attractive that people would want to feel invited.